Good morning. Today's daf in Erevinayin Tes. We are nine Chesmad Beis. We're starting this morning from the Mishnah. Mishnah continues a long hour discussion regarding the barrier that would separate two chatzeros. Two chatzeros that have a wall separating the two of them. So they are counted as two separate chatzeros, and they do not have an option of making a united Erev. On the other hand, if there's a Pesach, if there's an opening, an entrance that allows access from one chatzer to another, so now there's an option. Either they can remain two separate chatzeros, or if they would like, they can make a united Eruv. That has been the discussion here in this perek since the beginning of this perek. Continuing now in this perek, we're going to be discussing more of this topic. And up until now, we've been pretty much discussing walls and making entrances in the wall. Now we're going to be talking about a groove, a ridge, that exists between two chatzeros and whether or not that could create a buffer between the two chatzeros. The Mishnah starts off karitz. If let's say there is a groove, significant groove, shebein shtei chatzeros, and exists between the two chatzeros, under those circumstances now, what are going to be the dimensions of the groove that are going to be separating the two chatzeros? So the Mishnah says, amokasar v'rochav arba'a, if it's 10 tfachim deep and 4 tfachim wide. So under those circumstances, ma'arvin shtein ve'ein ma'arvin echad, so now it's considered like we have segregated chatzeros, and as a result of that, you can only make it as two Eruvin, meaning each chatzer has to make its own separate Eruv, and you do not have the option of being Ma'ariv Echad. You cannot make a united Eruv. We're going to fill up the groove in just a moment, but let's just understand these dimensions that are provided to us. So the ditch has to be 10 Fachim deep. So why exactly does it have to be 10 Fachim deep? So it's not perfectly clear. Presumably, Rashi doesn't say this, so this is just a suggestion. Presumably it has to be 10 tfachim deep, because now you have a mechitza. Now, mind you, of course, you don't really have a mechitza, meaning it's a ditch in the ground. So what we're going to suggest is that, yeah, it's true that we don't have a mechitza heading up, but we do have a mechitza going down. And we know the halachas of mechitza is that once you have a mechitza, so then the mechitza goes in every direction, right? In other words, we have what's called good achis, we have good osik. Good achis, mechitza is going down. Good asik, mechitza is going up. So presumably, now that I have a 10 tefach ditch, meaning it's 10 tefachim deep, so now I have the status of being a mechitza, and as a result of that, so now we also view it as the mechitza is going up. Presumably, that's the shot behind the depth of the ditch being 10 tefachim. What about the gap being 4 tefachim? So here Rashi says very clearly. Rashi writes over here, v'racha of dalat tefachim, de pachus mikan, Noach lifsoa misfaso elsfaso. So because if the gap is less than 4 tfachim, so then what you're going to do, a gap less than 4 tfachim, you're talking about a foot, maybe. So a little bit more than a foot, whatever. You're talking about something where you can just easily step over. Now once you can easily step over, so basically nothing is impeding your progress to go from one chatzit to another. So basically what you're looking at over here is something that's perfectly passable. So that means to say that if you put these two explanations together, so even if the ditch itself is 10 tefachim deep, but the gap between them is less than 4 tefachim wide, so basically even though the halacha may recognize the wall is going up, but nevertheless, the halacha also can't ignore the fact that you also have easy access, an easy pathway to go from one to the other. It'd be no different, if you go back to the previous Mishnah that we discussed in our perek, it really would be no different than having a wall, but having a portal allowing you to go from one to another. So over here, presumably, it'd be the same thing, which would then, of course, give you the right and the ability to make one united Eruv. Good. Now, we're continuing in the Mishnah. We're on Ayin Chesem and Beis. We're right in the middle of the Mishnah. Now, afilu malo kash o tevin. Now, let's say it's filled up with either straw or with hay. That means to say that the ditch is now filled in. So under those circumstances, what are we going to say regarding the status now of this ditch? Is it going to separate or not? The Mishnah also describes afilu malo kasha tevin, even if it's filled with kasha tevin, meaning that it's considered a ditch, even if it's filled up with something that is something which is temporary. On the other hand, malo afar. Oh, it's Tsararos, but if it's filled up with stones or pebbles, so Marvin Echave and Marvin Shine. So that's considered a filler for the ditch. And therefore, it's basically as if we have removed the ditch. And so therefore now we don't view it as two chatzers, we view it now as one large chatzer. Let's say we have a plank going across it that's four tfachim wide. So shtei gezustro zukenegezu v'chein. Sorry, v'chein shtei gezustro zukenegezu. Or let's say I have two balconies, and the two balconies are basically running parallel to one another. Our balconies are protruding out of a house. Because they're balconies, let's assume they're on the second floor, and they're protruding out of the house, and they're facing one another. So, under those circumstances, ma'arvin shtayim v'imratzu, ma'arvin echad. So now, basically, in both of these circumstances, meaning both if I have a platform over the ditch that allows access to go from one chatzur to another, or I have the two balconies where basically they're running one against the other, and I have a platform connecting the two. So under those circumstances, now basically that platform that allows me access from one to the other, it's like a Pesach. And so therefore it gives the opportunities for both of these chatzeros or both of these homes to make one united Eruv, if they would like to. Pachus Mikan, however, if the plank that is connecting the two of them is less than four tfachim, so Ma'arvin Shayim and Ma'arvin Echad, so then that's not going to be considered a Pesach, right? This has been a consistent theme throughout our entire perek, and that is that a Pesach has to be minimum four tfachim wide. Anything less than four tfachim wide is not going to be considered a Pesach. Our plank running across the ditch, if it's not four tfachim wide, it's not going to be a Pesach. Neither is a plank which goes from one balcony to the next balcony. Okay, so what we have in front of us right now is a series of halachas regarding ditches. We spoke about ditches being filled in. We talked about the material in which the ditches are filled in. And we talked about a plank running over the ditches. The Gemara starts off its discussion. V'tevel lo chaitza. You mean to tell me that when it comes to straw, so straw is not going to create a chatzitza. It's not going to fill in the ditch. The Gemara says, v'anan tanan. So the Gemara says, now this goes against another halacha. And this is a Mishnah actually coming up later on. And the Mishnah says that if I have a matbein, if I have basically a pile of hay, and it exists between two chaseros, and it's 10 tfachim tall, so now that's going to be separating the two chaseros. So the Gemara obviously is bothered. If I have a pile of hay, and that's serving as basically a barrier between two chatzeros, how is that any different than our discussion over here regarding a ditch being filled in with the hay, or with the straw, hay straw? So Amar Abai le'inyan mechitza kuli Amar lo pligi dehavi mechitza. Aval le'inyan chatzitza ibat lechait v'lo bat lelo chait. So Abai says, look, you really have to contextualize the two discussions. When we're talking about a pile of hay, and it's serving as a wall. So look, the pile of hay is obviously, it's substantive. It's a material. And if I have it and it 10 tefachim high, I can't dispute the fact that it is a wall serving as a barrier between two chatzeros. But over here, we're talking about the filling in of a ditch. Filling in of a ditch, so in other words, the ditch itself represents a separation, a segregation of the two chatzeros. And so now, if I fill it in, so that now it's going to be considered filled in, but only with the material that I plan on keeping there. If I fill it in with the material that I don't plan on keeping it there, so then that cannot be considered filler. So vis-a-vis the straw, if I plan on leaving it there, so fine. But if I don't plan on leaving it there, it really can't be viewed as something that fills in the ditch. So the Gemara says that once you contextualize the two discussions, you realize that they're not the same. It's not the same point, and it's not a steer one to the other. Continuing now in the Gemara, we're towards the bottom of the Amud on Ein Chesam and Beis, Malo Afar. If I fill it in with dirt, so then we said that the dirt is in fact going to be a filler of the ditch, and so therefore the ditch is basically no longer considered there, and so therefore now there are two chatzeros, so no longer considered two chatzeros, but rather one chatzer. V'hatanan. The Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is a Mishnah. So the Mishnah over there is talking about a house that is being filled in with dirt. Okay, and the topic of that Mishnah is Tumas Ohel. Take a look at the bottom Rashi over here. The Bayish Shetumas Meis Besochel. So Rashi writes, second line from the bottom in the Rashi. Rashi says that we're talking about a house where there is a mace in the house. So let's go over the ground rules. We all pretty much know this at this point in time, and that is that if there are human remains in a house, so what is the nature of the tumah? So their tumah can be transmitted in one of three ways, through contact, through carrying, and through ohel. Ohel means now is that the tumah from the remains is going to go up, it's going to go directly up, hit the roof, and as long as there is a tefach gap between the remains and the roof, so then what's going to happen now is that the tumah is going to stop, spread out over the entire area underneath the roof, and drop back down again. Good. So this is tumah sohel that we've discussed time and again. But that only is if there is airspace between the mace and the roof. Let's say now the Mishnah in Oalos is dealing with what if the house is filled in with dirt? Rashi writes over here, the next Rashi. Umilu alfer otzroos ubitlu mevutal. V'hav yetuma ritsutza she'en la oel la'atzma. So now, if the house is filled in, so this is what is described as tumas ritsutza. It really is no different than the body being buried under the ground, which basically means now that there's, not in a coffin, not in an aron. And now that means to say that there is no air, there's no gap between the remains and the dirt above it. And so therefore now the tumah just simply goes up. And it does, and it's not hitting a roof. Because the only way that the roof is described as a roof is only with a gap in airspace. So once the house is filled in, so now the tumah is just simply going to ascend. Rashi says, Ubo kasva ola adarakia. The amahil al hagag tame. And that means to say that if you're walking on the roof directly over the mace, so you're going to become tame. The chol tumah she'en la ol tefach boka'as va'ola ad harakia. Rashi says that if there's no ohel over the tumah just keeps ascending. Okay. So with that stated, so now what's the stira between our Mishnah here in Ervin and the Mishnah in Ohelos? So again, we're going to go back. We're going to reread the Mishnah. Two lines from the bottom on the Gemara. V'atanan b'ayishimilu tevenot zoros b'itlu batel. So the Mishnah says that if I fill in the house with the human remains in it, either with straw or with stones, and I'm mevatel, which means that I make a declaration that I have no intent on moving those stones. So under those circumstances, now those stones are considered mevutal. It's considered like it's going to be there permanently. And therefore, the tumah is going to ascend. Bidlu in. Now, the Gemara over here makes what is a really straightforward diuk. And that is that only if you're mevatel the stones, but lo bidlu. But if I'm not mevatel the stones, lo. So then no. And so that goes against our Mishnah, because our Mishnah over here says that stam, if I fill in the ditch with dirt or with stones, so then we consider it as if it is filled in. And so what we have over here is a steerer between the Mishnayos in terms of where I put it in without any clarification. And I put it in bistam. So what is the default setting of the stones that go into the ditch? What's the default setting of the stones that go into the house? And that is the steerer between the Mishnah here and the Mishnah in Olos. And to that, the Gemara is going to give a number of responses. So I'm Rav Huna Mantana Olos Rabbi Yosihi. So the first response of the Gemara, that of Rav Huna, is that the Mishnah in Olos is following the sheet of Rav Yosi. So the Gemara says, E Rav Yosi Ibcha Shaminale. Wait 1 second. Rav Yosi's position, the Gemara says, we know Rav Yosi's position. It's the exact opposite, the Tanya. Here the Gemara quotes a brisa, Rav Yosi Omer, Tevin, Ve'in Asid Lifnoso. If the house is filled in, this is Rav Yosi on the topic of Tumas Oel. If the house is filled in with straw, and I have no plans of removing that straw, harehu kistam afar ubato. We're going to treat the straw like afar, like dirt, and it is bato, which means that clearly in this brisa, the default setting of dirt is that even without any clarification or declaration, is that we plan on keeping it there. Afar vasi lifnoso, let's say it's dirt, but I know clearly that I'm going to be taking it out from there. So, harehu ki stam tevin, velo bato. So at that point in time, it's like stam tevin, which means that it's not bato. Clearly in the brisa, Rav Yosi is teaching us that the default setting of stones and of earth is that it is mevutal. It's going to be kept there, even without a clear declaration that that's so. So the Gemara says, Elam Ravasi, mantana erevin Rav Yosi. So Rav Yosi says, fine. So this it's not a negation of the answer of Rav Huna. We're just going to simply flip. And that is that our Mishnah in Erevin over here is following like the Shita Rav Yosi, meaning perfect. Our Mishnah over here says that the default setting of earth, meaning when I fill in the ditch with either stones or with dirt, so then it's considered filled in. And that represents the sheet of Rav Yossi, meaning, as we just have clarified, that Rav Yossi takes the default setting of stones and earth, and he considers that to be as if it is mevutal. Good. That is answer number one. It's approach number one. Approach number two of the Gemara. Rav Huna bereid Rav Yeshua Amar Tuma Shabbos Karamis. What are you doing? You're comparing the halachas of Tuma to the halachas of Shabbos. Filling in a house during the week versus filling in the ditch for the purposes of Shabbos. The Gemara says, not comparable. The Gemara says, consider the following. On Shabbos, you have a wallet, and your wallet's out in the street. Now, it's Shabbos, so are you going to leave it there for the remainder of Shabbos? The answer is yes. There is a halach of muksa that dictates that you can't pick up the wallet and bring it in. And even though, obviously, you know right after, immediately after Shabbos, you plan on bringing the wallet back in, but nevertheless, on Shabbos itself, you're going to leave it there for the remainder of Shabbos because the wallet is muksa. The money in the wallet is muksa. Same thing over here when I have dirt in the ditch over the course of Shabbos. Dirt in the ditch over the course of Shabbos, so muksa dictates that we're going to leave it there at least for the duration of Shabbos. Masha Inkim, when you're talking about a house and filling in the house, it's not a Shabbos consideration. And so it very well may be that even though the dirt's there now, but you don't plan on keeping the dirt there. So the Gemara says that really the comparison between filling in the house during the week versus the dirt on Shabbos, it's not a it's not a good comparison, and you can't equate the two, and so therefore a distinction to be drawn between the two. That's approach number two. And then approach number three of the Gemara, Rav Ashi Amar Bais HaCharetz Karamis. Again, let's contextualize the two discussions. We're talking about filling in a home versus filling in a ditch. And the Gemara says, and even that in of itself is not comparable. So Bishlam Acharitz le mitam ekai. Because when it comes to the ditch, what is our goal? Our goal is to fill in the ditch. Meaning nobody wants a ditch that stands between two chatzeros, right? If all you have is a ditch and significance, 10 tefachim deep, 4 tefachim wide, so the only thing that's going to happen is that people are going to get hurt. So we want the ditch filled in. So you fill it in with rocks and with earth. And even if you're not mevato, but the assumption is, the understanding is that we want the ditch filled in. That's pretty much what everybody wants to do. So therefore, the default setting is that it's considered mevutal. Mashenken alabayas limitame kai. Who's filling in a house with dirt? Meaning, obviously, you're doing so, but it's so unusual that in order for the dirt to be considered mivutal, you have to actively declare that you plan on keeping the earth here, because under normal circumstances, you're not filling in a house in with dirt. Okay. We are at the two dots. Nasan alav neser sherech of dalin. Okay. We are talking about now creating a platform allowing access to go from one side of the ditch to the other side of the ditch. So we didn't fill in the ditch. We just simply have a platform allowing people to go over, and that is viewed as a Pesach, and thereby allowing either option A, that the two chatzeros remain independent, or option B, the two chatzeros can make one joint Eruv. The Gemara comments on this, Amar Rava lo shanu elo shenasan lerachvo, ava la arko afilo kol shehu nami, sherei mi'ato midale. The description over here of a platform going across, so Rava says, fine. So when the platform goes across, so it has to be 4 tefachim wide. However, let's say what the platform is doing is just simply creating an extension on one side. So if you have a picture over here, it'd be very helpful just to be able to visualize and see what we're describing over here. But basically what's happening is that we are just simply bridging the gap a little bit between one side and another side. So under those circumstances, what Rav is teaching us is that also is going to create a Pesach between one side and the other side. Why? Because again, as we discussed in the Mishnah, the reason why when the gap is 4 tefachim wide, it's viewed as a gap is because it is not easily accessible from one side to the other. Once I bridge the distance, and so now the distance between the two is less than 4 tefachim, so that in of itself is now going to create easier access and allow it to go from one side to the other. The Gemara says that our plank bridging together the two sides is not only limited to the case of the two chaseros separated by a ditch, but it also applies to balconies as well. If I have two balconies and the balconies are basically side by side, right? By the way, I didn't make this point clear in the Mishnah. The balconies could either be described as on the same side of the street, just simply side by side, or the balconies are facing one another across the street. Either way, right? From Rashi's description, you get the sense that they are on the same side of the street. But either way, if I have a plank allowing access to go from one balcony to another, so now that creates a Pesach between these two balconies, allowing the owners of these balconies to go ahead and make a single Eruv if they would like to. On this, Rava also has a comment. Amar Rava. Hadamar zu keneged zu in zu shalai keneged zu lo. Zu shalo keneged zu lo. So the description over here where a plank is able to unify the two balconies is only when the two balconies are facing one another. Over here, again, a picture would be extraordinarily helpful to see exactly what Rashi is describing over here when the two balconies are not in perfect alignment with one another. Okay, in other words, that one balcony is offset off the other balcony, not in terms of height, but just in terms of basically when you are looking directly from one balcony to another and they are not in perfect alignment with one another. So under those circumstances, Rava says, the plank is not going to help you. Because once the balconies are offset one off the other, so then traversing the balcony, the plank getting from one to the other is going to be somewhat more precarious, and it doesn't create that easy access that unifies the two balconies. And the Gemara says another comment as well. So Vizula Malamizunami lo amarn elashiesh bein zelazeshoshatochim. Ava ein bein zelazeshoshosha gizustra akumahi. The Gemara says, and even in terms of, let's say they're off in terms of height. If they're off in terms of height, if the height differential is less than 3 tfachim, so basically the Gemara says, fine. So that just simply means now that it's a little bit offset, but okay. Uneven floors. Uneven floors is not going to disrupt the unity of a home or of a chatzer. And over here, if the height differential between the two is less than 3 tfachim, so gezustra akumahi. Fine, that creates a certain unevenness in the balcony, but that doesn't disrupt the fact that we could view it as a unified balcony. Okay, and again, over here, by the way, you have pictures to help you see this. It would be very helpful. We're up to our next Mishnah. Ein Testament Aleph, halfway down the Amud. Matvein Shebein Shtei Chatzeros. Gavoa Asara Tfachim, Ma'arvin Shnayim Ve'ein Ma'arvin Echad. Okay, we already saw this Mishnah earlier this morning. The Gemara quoted this Mishnah as what seems to be a contradiction between this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah, but the Gemara already resolved it. If I have a stack of straw separating the two chatzeros, and the stack of straw is 10 tefachim high, so then, so the straw is going to be viewed as a wall. And remember, just moments earlier this morning, we talked about how the straw, on one hand, may not necessarily be viewed as filling the ditch. On the other hand, this pile of straw is considered a wall. But then, just to review what we saw earlier this morning, yeah, that's correct. Because in terms of the pile of straw being a wall, so the Gemara says that is it's substantive in nature, and you can't deny the fact that right now separating the two chatzeros, you have a pile of straw. On the other hand, if we're looking to fill in a ditch, if you're using material that you plan on keeping there, like dirt, like stones, so fine, that fills in the ditch. But straw that you know you're going to take out, the straw back in the day had many usages, animal fodder being the principal usage of it. So under those circumstances, we don't view it as a filler of the ditch. Good. That's what we said earlier this morning. Okay, chazara on what we did 20 minutes ago. Okay, that's exciting. The Mishnah, mat ben shebein shei chatzeros, gavo asar tfachim, ma'arvin shayim ven ma'arvin echad. Eilu ma'achilu mikan, ve'eilu ma'achilu mikan, nismayin atev me'asar tfachim, ma'arvin echad, ve'ein ma'arvin shayim. Then the Mishnah has a really interesting halacha, which is as follows. As we pointed out, the straw over here under discussion is straw, which is basically animal fodder. So now you have each of the residents of the chatzer approaching the straw stack, separating the two chatzeros, and basically allowing their animal to eat from the stack of straw. And the Mishnah says that's fine. That would be fine. Now, obviously, as each of the members of the chaser allow their animals to eat from the straw, so the pile of straw is going to get diminished. And the Mishnah says, okay, so nismayit ha-tevin mi'asar ha-tfachim, marvin echad ve'in marvin shnayim. So if now the stack of straw gets less to 10 tfachim, so now it's no longer a wall separating the two chaseros, and under those circumstances now, these chaseros are to be viewed as one, not as two. Now, the Gemara is going to make this point clear, but we can, even before we get to the Gemara, we could say it pretty much in the Mishnah as well. Are we talking about where the minimization occurred on Shabbos itself? So, unlikely. First of all, we had a discussion earlier in our Masechta in that basically whatever status you're going into Shabbos is a status that remains for the balance of Shabbos as well. Right? That's the that's one discussion that we had. Although, to be fair, that really was more of a discussion regarding any changes of residence over the course of Shabbos. Over here, it's not exactly the same, admittedly, because over here, we're talking about where a wall actually comes down. So it may not exactly be the same discussion, but nevertheless, we did have that discussion earlier. Furthermore, just even the language of the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah says, Ma'arvin echad ve'in ma'arvin shnayim, right? You can only make one eruv, not two eruvim. When do you set up an eruv? As we already discussed numerous times, the eruv chatzeres is set up before Shabbos. So over here, if the change occurred on Shabbos itself, then the language of the Mishnah makes no sense. You can make an eruv as one, but not as two. You're not making an eruv on Shabbos. So it's pretty clear from the Mishnah that we're talking about where the minimization was occurring before Shabbos. Anyway, really interesting Rashi over here. Ma'achilin. Rashi writes over here in the Mishnah, Ma'achilin, mina tevin lebehemtam, velo chashinan, dilma mamit tevin miyud, So Rashi writes over here that, look, what would be the concern if we allowed each members of the chatzar to have their animals eating from the haystack? Well, the concern could be, says Rashi, that as their animals are eating, so obviously diminishing the size of the height of the haystack. And then what's going to happen on Shabbos is it's going to drop lower to 10 tefachim, and no one was aware of it because it's happening gradually. Rashi said that that's all not the concern. Rashi writes, "Afilu imei ilo havi miut apnei eser amos v'yoser lo asri daha ad eser pischa havai ve'im behema me'etzes kol kach be'achilaso b'Shabbos echad." Rashi says it's just simply not going to happen that you're going to have that kind of minimization that occurs over the course of one Shabbos. So Rashi says simply that the basis of the Mishnah in terms of why we're not concerned is simply because over the course of one Shabbos, it's really unlikely that it's going to drop to below 10. It certainly sounds like from the Rashi that if we were to allow this to occur for multiple Shabbosim, so eventually, gradually, it will get to lower than 10. It seems to be a pretty obvious point. We start with the Gemara. Ravuna says, I'm going to put a qualifier in the Mishnah. The Mishnah allows each resident of each of the chatzeros to have their animals go and to eat directly from the haystack, separating the two chatzeros. But Ravuna says, but what you can't do is that you can't actually take the haystack yourself, put it in a bucket, in some sort of trough and allow to your animal to eat from it, meaning the only allowance of the Mishnah, says Rav Huna, is for the animals to eat directly from the haystack. I'll cite Rashi over here as well. Rashi says over here, Shalo yitem biyadam l'soch kupaso, dil moshaki tuva ma'ma'aylei, mi'asar v'kamatata b'chatzar asura, u'ma'achilin diktani b'masisun shabahima ba'av v'chelas, v'asam lo'chayshin l'dil ma'ma'ayma kali kali achla. So Rashi says, what's the difference between your animal eating directly versus you taking the haystack? So Rashi writes in his first pshat, because of the nature of your animal eating versus you taking it. If your animal's eating, so your animal's going to be eating at a gradual rate. In other words, your animal will eat whatever your animal is right now hungry for, but your animal will not hoard. You, on the other hand, says Rashi, Rashi's language isn't exactly like this, but you're a hoarder, says Rashi. In other words, the chances are is that if you're taking the hay, so the chances are you're going to take much more than what your animal is going to want to eat. And so therefore, the chances of you taking removing more hay, thereby not gradually lowering the haystack, but accelerating the lowering of the haystack. So there's a difference between you and your animal. That's one way Rashi explains it. Admittedly, Rashi does give another way to explain it. Lishna achrina, lo yitein lesoch kupaso mishum, demukta me'ethma lemechitzazu. Rashi says it could also be a muksa issue as well, which is interesting, meaning for you it's a muksa issue, but for your animal it's not going to be a muksa issue. That in of itself is fine, but but certainly an interesting idea of Rashi in his second shot. Let's go back to the Gemara. The Gemara is bothered because Rav Huna says that your animal can eat it directly, but you yourself can't take it for the reasons that we just articulated. So the Gemara says, "Ula uk me shari." You can put your animal there and allow your animal to eat. Va'amar Rav Huna, amar Rav Chanina. Ma'amid Adam es behemto agabe asabim b'shabes ve'in ma'amid Adam es behemto agabe muksa b'shabes. So the Gemara says that it goes against another statement of Rav Huna. Notably, Rav Huna says that what you could do with your animal is that you could take your animal and take it to graze on Shabbos. And even though it's going to be pulling grass out of the ground, that's no problem whatsoever. Masha'in Kane, if you were to take your animal to Muksa, so that's going to be a problem. What's the difference? So the Rashi over here points out, because when it comes to the grass, so you're not going to pluck the grass out of the ground. Plucking the grass out of the ground, that's an Issa D'Oraisa, it's a Malacha D'Oraisa. You're not going to do that. Your animal, by the way, has full allowance to do it. If you recall, this was a Tosus back on Shabbos, and please forgive me, I forgot the daf, but Tosus back on Shabbos discussed the following. Your animal grazing on Shabbos, right? Isn't that going to be a problem? Meaning your animal has to be a Shomer Shabbos, right? Shvisus Bemto is that your animal, you have to ensure that your animal doesn't violate Shabbos. You can't put burdens on your animal, right? We had a Perek in Shabbos discussing this very topic. So, and by the way, I'm guessing that Tosos probably is in that parak. But anyway, so fifth parak of Shabbos. So anyway, why don't we say that your animal can't graze on Shabbos? So Tosos says, Tosos over there quoted Yerushalmi. So Tosos says that because your animal, in terms of not working, so your animal can't be laid with a burden, meaning you can't put a burden on the animal. But your animal has every right to go ahead and eat on Shabbos, and if the normal way of an animal eating is grazing and pulling the grass out of the ground, so that's not going to be a violation of Shabbos. That is considered leman yanuach. Your animal is resting. Okay, fine. Anyway, if you allow your animal to graze on Shabbos, you're not going to pluck the grass out of the ground because it's an issa d'oraisa, and the built-in issa d'oraisa is going to prevent you from doing so. But if you bring your animal to muksa, and your animal goes that needs the muksa, so it's only an issa d'rabbanan. You may not be so naturally inhibited from taking the muksa yourself. So Rav Huna says you don't bring your animal to muksa because you're going to then be tempted to move the muksa yourself. Okay, right? Kind of like similar to what we discussed just a day ago. So asu chizuk ledivrayim. But when it comes to an issa d'rabbanan, a gzera d'rabbanan, so the chachamim realize that sometimes they have to fortify that legislation. Good. So the Gemara says, okay, so now I'm stuck between two halachas of Rav Huna. One halacha of Rav Huna here by the chatzer that is separated by the haystack is that you're allowed to take your animal and bring it up to the haystack and allow your animal to eat directly from the haystack. And meanwhile, we have another halacha of Rav Huna, which is that if the haystack is muksa, so then don't bring your animal to go ahead and to eat from it because then you may take from it yourself. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand that's a problem, but dekayim le ba'apa ve'azla v'achla. So the Gemara says, okay, so we'll navigate between the two statements of Rav Huna. To bring your animal directly up to the haystack, that's going to be a problem, because then you're going to take from the haystack yourself. However, if you're just simply directing traffic, meaning you're basically blocking off other ways for your animal to go, so your animal is basically now going to be forced in the direction of the haystack, that's going to be acceptable. That's going to be fine. That's what we're describing over here. Continuing in the Gemara. V'lo yitin l'sof kupaso. Teven. You can't take the hay and with your own hands, as we already explained why. V'atanya, the Gemara says, okay, but I am bothered because of a brisa. Brisa over here, we're going to be spending a good amount of time with this brisa. Let's learn the brisa first. Abay shemen shei chatzeros, if I have a house between two chatzeros, umiluhu teven. And the house is filled with straw. Okay, so if you have a picture of this, it would be really helpful. Basically, what we're looking at is that we're looking at three houses that are contiguous one to another, and the two exterior houses are opened up into two separate chatzeros. Now, the center house over here is filled with straw. And so I have that center house filled with straw. The Bryce is going to be talking about how we're going to be viewing that center house with straw. Let's see the brace again. So this center house now is going to be serving as a wall separating the two external houses. And so now each of the external houses is viewed as separated one from the other because of the center house that's filled with straw. Zenos en l'soch kupaso v'yachil, v'zenos en l'soch kupaso v'yachil. Now, each exterior house can go ahead and take from the central house the straw from that central house. Now, the problem is, the Braisa says that you could do so b'yadayim, you can even do so with your hands. Now, this is the reason why we're quoting the Braisa over here, because this Braisa goes against Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that the only allowance is to have your animal go ahead and to eat from the pile of straw, but you can't take it with your hands. Good. So that's why we're quoting the Braisa right now, and in a moment the Gemara is going to resolve the difference between the Braisa and Rav Huna. But meanwhile, we're still in the Braisa. Nisma'e ta'teven miyutfachim. Let's say the pile of the straw now has gone down to less than 10 tfachim. And by the way, based on what we saw earlier this morning, it makes perfect sense. Because if you're taking it with your hands, like Rashi described earlier. So now, obviously, that's going to accelerate the process of the pile diminishing. So shnei masurim. So now, both houses are going to be usur. Because now what happens is that this house is opening up into a newly exposed area. So kesed osa. So what can you do? Meaning, now that I have the two houses that are opened up into the central area, and they didn't make an eruv prior to Shabbos into the central area, so what do you do? So the Braisa says, no, I'll space so. So what each one can do is that, or not each one. One of them is going to do is either he's going to close his door, or mevatel reshus, so he's going to relinquish his rights to that center, to that middle house, who also v'chaver mutter. So now he, obviously because he relinquished rights, he can't go ahead and take, but the other house on the other side of the center house, so he can now do so. And then the Braisa makes one additional point, not related to our discussion, but on a separate issue, which is that if, let's say, I have a ditch filled with hay, and it happens to be that it's a large ditch filled with hay, and I have the center of this ditch being the border of two separate tchumim. A Tchum Shabbos coming from one side, a Tchum Shabbos coming from the other side. So here what we're going to allow to do is each member of each of the Tchumim go ahead and take from their side and not to be concerned that they're going to take from the other side of the pile, which is outside of their Tchum. Good. Okay, and the Gemara is going to make a quick comment on this last point at the end. But meanwhile, the whole reason why we quoted the Braisa is because the Braisa seems to go against Rav Huna. And the Gemara makes that point right now. And so the obvious problem is that the Braisa says they can take from the center house and they can take the haystack directly with their hands. And Rav Huna says you can't do that. So Amri Bais came into Ika Michitzos Vitikra ki Mifchas Minkarele Milsa. Hacha lo Minkarele Milsa. So the Gemara says, again, it's a simple question of contextualizing the two discussions. In the Braisa, you have the haystack in the house. So you have a framework in terms of recognizing when the pile gets below 10 tefachim. Meaning because you have, obviously, you have a house to measure the pile of hay. And the house has got a ceiling to it. And so therefore, if the pile of hay gets to below 10 tefachim, it's immediately recognizable in contrast to the ceiling above it. On the other hand, if I have a chatzer, an open courtyard, and of a haystack in the courtyard, so I have no frame of reference, and so therefore, when the pile diminishes to below 10 tefachim, it's not going to be easily discernible, and that's why Rav Huna says to take that pile of hay with your hands, accelerating the diminishment process, and not having a frame of context to see when it's going to get to below 10, there's more reason to be concerned. Good. Continuing in the Gemara, Nismayda Tevin Me'asar Tefachim, Shnei Masurim. Okay, as long as we quoted the Braisa, this is par for the course of the Gemara. So the Gemara wants to go over some of the points of the Braisa that we made, even though we really, mission accomplished, meaning we quoted the Braisa to challenge Rav Huna, but the Gemara now explained the difference between Rav Huna and the Braisa, but here we are in the Braisa, so the Gemara now is going to sit on a couple of the lines in the Braisa and analyze them. So first of all, the Braisa said that once the pile of the center house goes to below 10 tefachim, so then both houses are going to be usur, because now they're opened up into a house that previously was not a open area. Ha'asar shari. If the pile goes to just to 10, so then it's going to be mutter v'afagav de midlei tikra tuva. So the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. There's a gap between now, the top of the pile of 10 tefachim, and the roof of the house. And the Gemara says, shma mina, mechitza shemin megias l'tikra, shma mechitza. So the Gemara says, okay, throwback. Throwback to what we discussed earlier in the Masechta, and that is that if I have walls and I have a roof going on, and even though a line going directly from the walls to the roof, so it would hit, but it didn't physically actually hit. And when you have mechitzos where they don't reach the roof, is that considered mechitzos, yes or no? So we had this debate earlier. So the Gemara says, isn't our Braisa going to weigh in on this debate? Because the Braisa says that even though the pile of hay now has been reduced to just a 10 tefachim, it's still considered as if the house is filled in, despite the fact that there is a gap between the top of the haystack and the roof. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Hach Abaye, Shosh Asar, Chaser, Mashu, Askinim Vateven, Asara. Abaye says, look, here's what we could do. We could give circumstances to our particular Braisa, so it doesn't weigh in on that discussion. It's a bit of a dochek. It's a forced explanation, but as long as we could give such an explanation, so therefore we could simply deflect. And we could say that this Braisa is not weighing in on that discussion. So Abaye says that it could very well be that our Braisa is describing a scenario in which the house itself, the total height of the interior of the house is just under 13 tefachim, and now the haystack is 10 tefachim. Lava tells us that the gap is filled in. Not because it's weighing in on the discussion of walls not hitting the ceiling, but love is something, it's a lachla moshe mesina that everyone recognizes. So if I have less than a 3 tefach gap between the top of the haystack and the roof, so it's filled in on the principle of love. Ravuna bereder of Yeshua Amar filo tema bebay sasara. So, and the Gemara gives now a second suggestion, that of Ravuna bereder of Yeshua, and that is that our house is 10 tefachim high, and v'teven shiva umashu, and the haystack is 7 and a little bit more than 7. So the Gemara says, so now that the haystack is 7 and a little bit more, and the roof is 10 tefachim, Lava tells us basically that it's filled in. So the Gemara says, Bishlam la bayahana dikana me asara, el ravuna bereder of Yeshua, mai me asara, me taras asara. So the Gemara says, look, the two answers of Abai and Ravuna bereder of Yeshua are essentially the same. It's just a question of which fits in better with the language of the Braisa. The Gemara acknowledges that Abai fits in a lot better with the language of the Braisa, because the Braisa says that the haystack pile went to just to 10, which is the way Abai explained it, described it. Meaning the haystack pile is 10, the roof is just under 13 tefachim, love it connects it to, good. But Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua doesn't really fit in so well with the language of the Braisa, because the language of the Braisa is that the haystack pile went to 10. And meanwhile, Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua is actually describing it as it went to 7 and a little bit more. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right, but look, with the principle of Lavud, 7 becomes 10, right? 7 is the new 10, okay? Meaning Lavud brings you to 10. That's the Torah Asara that the Gemara is describing. Shnei Masurim, the Gemara continues now in the Braisa. Shema Minah Diurim Habayim B'Shabbos Asurin. The Gemara says, okay, the Braisa talks about where there's a diminishment. Presumably, the diminishment occurs on Shabbos. And so basically, now what we have done is we exposed an area on Shabbos. This is the topic of Diurin Habayim B'Shabbos. Once again, another throwback. And when I have Diurin Habayim B'Shabbos, so do we say over there that basically we have to account for the new residences that are created on Shabbos? The answer seemingly is yes. And our Braisa seems to speak to this idea. So the Gemara says, not necessarily imit me esmal. It could very well be that the diminishment occurred before Shabbos. Meaning, it's not that they're taking from the haystack on Shabbos in of itself. They're taking it during the entire week. Continuing in the Braisa, Ketzer Osa, no, os beto mevato reshuso. So what you do is you lock the door, meaning that with this newly exposed area, and now the two external houses which are flanking the center house now, which is newly exposed, so how can you allow both of them to go into the center house? The answer is you can't. In other words, it's a shared property. It's a shared area, and no eruv was made, so you can't have both. So what can you do? So you can have one person lock the door in mevato reshuso. The Gemara says tarte. So the Gemara says I need both. Meaning, isn't one of them by itself going to be sufficient? So the Gemara gives two answers. Number one, hachli kamaro nolos beisal o mevatel es reshuso. So the Gemara says no. One way to understand the braisa is either or. Either you lock the door, or you relinquish your rights to the center area. Or the Gemara says, no, maybe over here you do need both. Maybe you do need to lock the door and you also need to relinquish property, because consider the idea that up until now you've been very comfortably walking into the center home, taking the hay from the center home. So now, in order to break the habit, so lock the door and on top of that also relinquish the rights, so that now that really will reinforce the idea that you can't go into this area because now it's a shared property. Okay. Who aser v'chaveru muter pshita? So the Gemara says, L'tzricha dahadar idach ubatale l'chavre. So the Gemara says, well, if one were to relinquish his rights and the other one now can go ahead and transfer from his home into the center, isn't that obvious? Isn't that the basic idea of bitul harishus? So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe not. Maybe the Mishnah is being mechadesh, or the Brice, I should say, is being mechadesh that we can have reciprocal relinquishment, a topic that also comes back earlier in the Masechta. The Gemara says, v'akamash melandei mevatlin v'chozer mevatlin. And maybe the point in the Brice is you can't have reciprocal relinquishment, meaning relinquishment on Shabbos can only be one directional, and you cannot have it reciprocated in the other direction. Good. The last part of the Braisa is that if I have this big ditch of hay, where the center of this ditch is basically the border of two separate tchumim, I can have each members of each of the separate tchumim go ahead and take from the haystack up to their tchum. So the Gemara says, Pshita, the Gemara says, now I think that part is obvious. So the Gemara says, not necessarily, lo tzricha, le Rabbi Akiva damar tchumim daraisa. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the braisa could even conform to the shita of Rabbi Akiva. You recall that Rabbi Akiva says that tchumim is an issa daraisa. So maybe over here, Rabbi Akiva would be much more cautious. And he would say, look, if part of this pile of hay is outside of somebody's tchum, so then one can easily imagine that he may go ahead and encroach on the area that he's not allowed to, and be violating an issa daraisa. So mao detema ligzor doma aser l'ichlufei kamash malan. And so the Gemara says that would have been a reasonable consideration, according to Rabbi Akiva, that there would be room for gzeira in such a situation. And the Gemara says, yeah, that is reasonable. But the Gemara says, but we don't follow that way. Meaning that even according to Rabbi Akiva, no gzeira is made. Okay, it would be good if we finish it off. But I'm gonna reserve, considering that this really starts a new sugya. So Kate Samishtafim we'll start with tomorrow. And let's go quickly recap our daf for this morning. Okay, we started with the Mishnah on Ayin Ches Amud Beis, and we spoke about a ditch that is situated between two chatzeros. If the ditch is 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide, so this is now going to create separation and segregation of the two chatzeros. The two chatzeros now are viewed as two separate chatzeros where each one of them can make their own separate eruv, but they cannot make a united eruv. The Mishnah talked about two strategies of bridging the chatzeros, and here with pun intended. One is either filling in the ditch. It's got to be you got to fill it in with something that you plan on keeping it there, like dirt, like stones, not like straw. And the other possibility is just simply putting a plank, a 4 tefach plank that goes ahead and allows access to go from one side to the other. Good. The Mishnah also pointed out that the plank could also work in terms of balconies that are opposite one another, facing one another. So the plank also can serve as a Pesach for those balconies as well. A number of discussions that we had in the Gemara on this Mishnah. Number one, where do we stand on the... the first issue was what seemingly is a steer between this Mishnah and a Mishnah that comes up also in today's daf, because the Mishnah says that a haystack existing between two chatzeros is in fact serving as a wall. And meanwhile, the first Mishnah says that hay itself is not considered a filler for a ditch, but the Gemara says yes, meaning the Mishnahs are not contradicting one another. A haystack as a wall is a wall, but as a filler for the ditch, you know you're going to be removing the hay, and so therefore it's not considered a filler for the ditch. The other big issue that was discussed in that first Mishnah of this morning is where do we stand regarding dirt? where it, what is the default setting of dirt and pebbles? Is it do we plan on keeping it there, which our Mishnah clearly is of the position, or maybe not? Maybe you have to make a verbal declaration in order for the earth or the dirt to be there. Seemingly, we have a stira between our Mishnah and the Mishnah Olos, and the Gemara gave a number of ways of explaining that they are not contradicting one another. Or, well, the first approach actually is that they are contradicting one another, and our Mishnah follows the Shita of Rav Yossi. Okay, but the Gemara also gave other ways in terms of how to explain it. We talked about the balconies, what happens if the balconies are offsetting, both in terms of they're not facing each other, or they're offsetting in terms of their vertical height. We had that very short discussion. We moved on to the next Mishnah. Mishnah talked about the haystack separating the two chatzeros. If the haystack is over 10 tefachim, so then it serves as a wall separating the two chatzeros. And then the Mishnah gives an allowance that each of the members of the chatzer can go ahead and bring their animals to go and feed on that straw, and we're not worried about the consumption of that straw. It's actually going to diminish the height of the haystack, and thereby creating removing, I should say, the wall between the two chatzeros. We're not worried about that. We went through the Rashi on that point in the Mishnah. Good. Rav Huna in the Gemara told us that you can allow your animals to eat from it, but you can't take it with your hands. The difference, as we pointed out, is that your animals are going to eat gradually. You, on the other hand, are not going to take gradually. And so so therefore, there's obviously a bigger concern that if there is an allowance for the people to take, so then the haystack wall is going to come down that much quicker. A stira between Rav Huna and Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that you can't take with your hands, but you can allow your animal to feed from it. Meanwhile, Rav Huna says that you can't bring your animal right up to Muksa for the concern that even though your animal is allowed to eat it, but you may go ahead and you may take it. So the Gemara says, yeah, our Mishnah is not talking about where you're actually bringing your animal right up to the haystack, but rather you're just simply directing your animal in that direction. And then the remainder of today's daf is that we talked about the Braisa. The Braisa that had the scenario where I had flanking houses on a center house, the center house was filled with hay. And under those circumstances, we said that as long as the haystack is going up to the ceiling, so that haystack is creating a division between the two exterior houses. However, the Braisa does say that each member of the house can go ahead and take from that haystack, and even with their hands, and that goes against the halacha of Rav Huna. And the Gemara spent time both defending Rav Huna on that point and looking at a number of other points that were made in the Braisa and going and throwing us back to a number of discussions that we had earlier. We'll stop over here.